motorsport fans and petrol heads alike, and welcome back to the Grid Watchers podcast, episode 5, where I'm joined by the usual suspects who go by the name of Alex, Ollie, and Rickson. How are you doing this evening, guys?
All good.
Not too bad. It's so funny listening to you doing an intro. It's like a different. Ah, oh, I'm loving it. I'm throwing the Belgian over the Welsh, it must be said.
Ah, I've been nervous all week, not gonna lie.
Ah, oh, it's so much better. Oh, so can much you, better. Can you do the intro every time, Ken?
The pressure for our three viewers, I mean, oof! But yeah, welcome to a slightly different podcast. As you know, there wasn't a Grand Prix weekend, but we decided to have a podcast anyway, just because we all miss each other very much, I guess. And also to keep our listeners entertained. And for this week's episode, we got something special lined up, which is the Grid Watchers garage, or Grid Watchers car history, as you'd mention it. So, guys, I asked you about your car history. You sent it to me, and there were some interesting cars, to say the least. But first of all, I want to introduce, or start off the podcast with a question pointed to all of you. I'm going to start with Ollie. Would you call yourself a petrol head?
Yes, because of my car history, I'd count myself better than the rest of you. Maybe not you, Ken, because you're old. You have lots of cars.
Yikes.
But I'd say I am a petrolhead, yes.
Well, there is one car in your car history that backs that up. But we'll leave that for a bit later in the episode. Rickson, what about you? Do you call yourself a petrolhead?
Not really. My car history is very short because I'm only 22, so I don't have a lot. And the last thing that I want to do is open the bonnet. It terrifies me.
Ooh. What, just like on a technical point of view, or just like dreading something wrong and having to shell out money?
It's just another thing to learn that it's just not going to be useful when there's a bloke who can do it for me. You know. Ooh,
right. Do you know where the dipstick is in your car?
Yeah, it's you, mate.
Oh, it's got to be one of those nights, isn't it? Yeah. Colin, do you call yourself a petrol head?
Yeah, I call myself a petrol head. My car history doesn't necessarily back that up that much, but no, I love my cars. I do love my cars. Hopefully, when money is less of a virtue, I'll be able to back that up with what I actually drive.
The thing is, being a petrol, yes, of course, you know what you drive, but sometimes, as you say, money can be an issue, especially if you go to college or you've got a mortgage or kids or whatever. But like, I think all four of us like properly enjoy car events like Goodwood or just basically a nice car passing us in the street. Or
for sure,
yeah, for sure.
We all go oh when you hear a nice
exactly. It does. I mean, someone could be having a conversation with you that's like so serious, but in the background you hear something coming and you're like, how do I look without being rude? Or at least I'm that way.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you sometimes go to, or one of you guys sometimes go to car meets, cars and coffee, or events on a nearby track? Well, we've done Goodwood, all of us, which was amazing.
I don't turn up to car parks in my car because I'm not a chav, so no.
This is a question to Jack.
Not why would it be a question to me?
Oh, well, man.
I'm definitely not a chav.
I don't know.
To answer your question again, without trying to be funny, like Alex is. I think it's quite a rare thing. Well, I say that. If you go out and look for it, obviously they're easy to come across. But
yeah,
as what Alex was saying earlier, I don't earn enough money to have something worth taking, or don't have the money to put into something that's worth taking.
Yeah, exactly.
Just rock up in what I'm driving now, I'd get laughed off the car park. I think it eventually, sure, why not? But I want to be making sure that I'm driving something decent.
Yeah, well, I've told you guys before that I live like 5 minutes from a racetrack in the Netherlands, at the Assen Circuit, known for its MotoGP. But in the summer, obviously when COVID isn't around, we've got a lot of events, Bimmerfest, Japfest, American Muscle Car, Supercar Sunday. But if your car isn't interesting enough, you can sneakily park it in the regular car park.
They allow that, do they?
Well, I've taken one of mine cars to a Italian car event, and I was actually on the paddock with a group of similar cars. And there's just something nice with looking around and seeing people that drive the same car as you do. Well, obviously you see every day, but you know, like seeing how they gave their personal touch to it.
Yeah, yeah. Every car's got to have a bit of personal touch, so it's nice to see when someone's a bit extravagant with it.
Well, speaking of personal touches, I'm seeing a car on the list here, and I want to know if this person did something to it. Well, I'm going to start us off with a car with the lowest power output. I'm not going to go lowest to highest, but just to kick us off, it's got a whopping 59 brake horsepower. It's got a massive 1.1 liter engine, and it's a Citroen C2. Now, will the owner please stand up?
I will happily stand up for that. It was a banger of a car. You know, as a first car, you're not going to get something too powerful. I was hoping for a bit more than 59 horsepower when I picked it up.
59!
59 horsepower. I had to replace it because a friend of mine lived at the top of a hill, and I struggled to get up the top of the hill when I had a couple of friends in the car when we went there.
So
partly had to replace it because it wouldn't go up the hill that well.
Nice.
it felt unhealthy when going up that hill, but
nah, I can imagine.
A car was good, you know. First cars are always fun. It had a split tailgate like a Land Rover. I don't quite know why that was a feature, but it had it anyway.
I see when you sent it to me that you said it was blue, but what kind of blue?
It wasn't like a sky blue. It was a deep blue. You know the most generic blue you find on a car. It was that. It was very blue.
Well, and that was your first car as well.
First car, car I picked up when I was 17.
Yeah, because insurance in the UK, it is a big thing, isn't it? If you're a first time driver.
Yeah. Insurance for it was the price of the car, which was £1,400 for the first year.
Was that by any chance more than the actual car?
Because the car was, in fairness, the car was only worth about a grand. Picked it up for a little bit more than that, but it was only worth about a grand after I picked it up.
Yeah, because Top Gear did a whole episode on that, didn't they? Trying to insure cars. And basically, you have to put it on your parents if you want to get anything more expensive than that, or anything with a more powerful engine. Is that correct?
Yeah. I had both my parents. Well, I put only my mum on it because I put my dad on it and my insurance went up.
Means your dad's terrible.
I don't quite know why. I literally have no idea why I put it up. I put my mum on it and it was fine. And then as soon as it wasn't going to make too much difference, I very swiftly removed her from my insurance.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, now, your car that you have now, I'm not going to spoil it yet, but that one is insured under your name.
It's insured under, well, obviously the other one was insured under my name, but it's only my name now. I'm the only one that can drive it. I reinsured it literally the other day, and they went, oh, you're the only one on it. Do you want to add anyone else? And I very swiftly said, no, I'm the only one that wants to drive this.
Yeah. And then obviously your quote went up after that.
No, not massively. It was the same. It was the same quote, because I haven't had my parents on it for a little while now. So it was the same. I managed to knock £100 off it though by bartering. I love car insurance. It's great.
Well, speaking of first cars, I think Alex's Citroen is a nice introduction to the other first cars. I think two other members in this podcast had the same, well, maybe not the same year, but both had the same car as their first car. And we're talking about a car obviously found at every McDonald's car park across the UK. tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm wrong.
No.
And that is I think it's one of the most sold, or at least second-hand sold cars in the UK. And that is the Vauxhall Corsa.
Woo! Let's go!
No one's ever been that excited for a Vauxhall Corsa.
Well, I mean, if it's the Mark III or the Mark IV, even the Mark V now, but those cars, every video you look up on YouTube from car meets or whatever, there's always so many Vauxhall Corsas. Well, and two of you guys, so that's Rickson and Ollie, you've both driven them.
Mm-hmm.
What's the appeal of them?
Cheap.
Cheap.
And they actually drive quite well. Like, it's a comfortable car. It's a small, comfortable car. Cheap if you're either first time buyer, or you haven't been driving for very long. So I think that's the appeal for most young people. And also as well, they can take a battering, man. You can see why a lot of people drive. When you do see them, they're battered. Not in every case, you know.
Yeah.
But in some cases, if you see a Corsa and there's a dodgy guy driving it, it's gonna be bashed up. But yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, like I said, like they're cheap. They're good to drive. They're not particularly powerful, but when you're a first time buyer, you don't really need something that's very powerful, really, because you're not. Yeah,
the max speed is 70 miles an hour on the motorway anyway. I mean, what do you need a 300 horsepower? Yeah,
legally,
I don't know. Just 70 on a motorway.
You could easily get away with about 120 if you're quick about it. Literally, if you're quick about it. So yeah.
But obviously, because they sold in those massive numbers, if something does go wrong or you break a wing mirror or a headlight or whatever, obviously parts are going to be plentiful, aren't they?
Well, yeah. It was like, do you remember when we were in Goodwood, Ken, and me and you went to that shop to get literally like, for I can't remember what it was. It was like, I mean, we just walked right in and I didn't know how to fit it. And the guy came out and was like, oh, yeah, I've done this loads of times. So he just took apart my car and just put it back together. I think it was
It was a bulb, yeah, but it was a bit awkward to reach. That was it.
Yeah, but he just went, yep. It took him a little bit because obviously he had to fucking take it all apart. But he knew what he was doing. And it's just, it's almost like he'd driven one himself. So it was quite easy.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, for those kind of things, I think it was Halfords, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we have got Halfords over here as well, but they're just not as big, and they're usually like in what the Americans call a mall, a shopping center-ish. Yeah. So you can't just turn up with your car. So then Rickson, when we went there, and he said like, yeah, sure, I'll put it in for you. I was like, customer service? In the UK? What is this?
You were surprised they were helpful.
I was just sat there chilling, just testing the lights for him. And
it was actually really cool. Yeah. Having a little look at how many courses have been sold, well, the latest statistic I can find is from 2018, which is the Opel, as we call it in Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, and, well, Vauxhall in the UK. Guess how many they sold in Europe in 2018?
20 million.
I was going to go million. 50 million.
50 million Vauxhall. I'm just talking about the Corsa, not Vauxhall in general.
69 million.
20.
I'm still going 50.
Only 20. Okay.
Guys, I'm just going to temper your enthusiasm a bit. It's not even a million.
What?
What, really?
It's the best car in the world.
Well, let's hold off on that one.
In 2018, well, the figures have been going down, actually. In 2018, they sold 216,000 Corsas, which is still a lot.
That's still
really? I thought it'd be way more.
Oh, wait. Since it's... Oh, I thought you meant since it's started.
No. Just yearly.
Oh, right. I wouldn't have said 20 million. My bad.
Well, I think in general, if you think about how many there are on the road, I think there's a lot of them that, well, obviously they change owners.
Yes.
But yeah, since its introduction, I think it's a very popular car.
It's easily top 10. Oh, it's easy to drive. You can chuck it around the place. Again, like Alex's car, it's not great up hills. As I and Rickson found out a few years ago when we were driving down to Plymouth, just the two of us in my 1.2 five-door Corsa EcoFlex, we got overtaken by a tractor driving up a hill.
Oh, no!
Oh, no!
Yeah.
We were both doing that thing where you're like trying to urge it on, like when you jump out.
Yeah, you're trying to bump start it.
trying to get momentum through it.
Cruised alongside and passed us, and me and Ollie were just like shaking our head.
It was a long hill, but we saw the hill, and I think Rickson said, Ollie, you better floor it here because we're not going to make it to the top. I was like, okay. And then, of course, with this course, you put your foot down and nothing happens. So we get to the hill, and we're like, really, at the end, I think I was in first by the top of the hill because I couldn't I thought I was going to stall because we just couldn't get to the top of the hill. And like, yeah, we got overtaken by a tractor and it was very embarrassing, but a fun story to tell.
Yeah.
We took him back though. Don't even worry about that.
Yes.
Next corner. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Around the outside, back end, drifting.
The old switcheroo. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Thing is, I think the course is easily up there with like, well, at least it is over here. Like, it's in the hatchback category. It's like the Clio, the Corsa. What else you got? But I think I see the appeal because, well, the company I work with now, we work for Vauxhall. But the new models, they took a completely new direction. Mm. And the new models are so ridiculously expensive. They're not marketing them towards new drivers anymore or young drivers anymore. Obviously, they got an electric Corsa now as well, but the new base Corsa, it looks really nice, but it's going to take a while for those to be affordable for young drivers.
Yeah, they're marketing it very differently now. And
yeah.
We can slate Corsas and C2s and Fiestas and whatever all we want, but they're great cars for what they need to be. Yeah, they're not the fastest car. You're not going to break any land speed records, but it's such a versatile car.
Yeah,
you know that they've even got van versions. You know where there's no back seats and there's no windows, so it's a very good car,
isn't it? Yeah.
So I'm sure there's a C2 version of it as well. But they're little city cars. They're great, and it's not too small like a smart car, but it's not too big like a 4x4 or an SUV. So it's a great little car.
Yeah, well, I see the appeal of it. It's. And I think they're quite easy to work on as well, as long as you have Google or manual. I mean, I would ask Jack, but he'd probably just ask a mechanic.
Yeah.
Well, 100%. Now we're on the topic of my first car. It was a bit different. It wasn't shown on my parents'
horse and carriage.
It wasn't a horse and carriage.
Damn it, Ollie. Damn it.
I was thinking about this all week. I was like, they're gonna make some joke about a Ford Model T or something.
That stallion did I first purchase from the Lord.
No, mine was a Ford Escort. Five door model.
All right.
Silver with the it actually had a rear spoiler, came from the factory. RS wheels. And it was a 1.8 TDI, which the insurance loved as an 18-year-old driver. So that's why it was put on my parents' name.
Ken was defo a chav, man.
Yeah, I mean,
or he got money illegally.
No, I mean, I
love that. Dealing drugs or something.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, diesel cars have a lot more torque, but I've just looked up the stats because for my feeling, when I was 18, I thought, wow, this car goes like the absolute clappers. And I just looked it up. It's got a whopping 90 horsepower. So I don't know where that feeling came from.
But I've never driven anything so powerful.
I really loved that car. You know, I did a holiday with friends in it. I didn't even have a license back then, but I did have the car. So my friend drove it. And we didn't break down. We had a puncture on the way over there because there was some shit lying in the middle of the road, but that car, I only had it for a few months, but it was part of quite some memorable voyages.
Why did you only have it for a few months, Ken?
Well, suddenly it was a MOT time, and Fords do have a small, well, Fords from that era do have a small tendency to develop a slight rust issue.
Crash it, Ken?
No, yes, I did not. No.
Did it have a rust issue because it was in a tree?
No, it had a rust issue because they don't know how to make cars. But the guy from the MOT, you know, does all the things, you know, checks the lights, the brakes, everything's working. I'm feeling already cocky, like, oh yeah, look at me in my 1.8 diesel. And then he takes a screwdriver and starts poking on the chassis, the undercarriage. And I could see the screwdriver suddenly disappearing.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh, no. Where's that gone? And can you please stop poking my car? And then he said, you know, you can keep driving it, but you're probably going to end up with your bum on the asphalt at some point because your car's completely rusted through. And then that was suddenly a premature end to the Ford Escort. The undercarriage was completely rusted.
That sounds like a nice car as well.
Out of interest, how much did it cost you or your parents at the time?
I think
one shilling or
1,400 euros and some gold doubloons. It was a brilliant car for the time around. It was just unlucky with the rush issue. But I mean, I'm glad I said it was a Ford Escort, because if you say my first time was with a 20-year-old Escort, that sounds a bit weird.
Especially for you, because she's only 20.
Yeah, but that was, I mean, I still think about that car, and I don't have any pictures of it anymore, and every picture I find online just doesn't do it justice.
Oh, that's savage, that is.
They didn't have cameras back then.
Well, it took ages for it to develop and everything. But I did give you guys some, well, I wouldn't call it homework, but I did ask you guys to make a top three of cars without a budget. Like, say, I give you unlimited budget and we have to go to the dealership right now. Which three cars would you buy? I'm going to do all of you individually spread out through this podcast, but I'm going to start with Ollie. Going from third to first, what are the three cars you would buy in a heartbeat if money was not an issue?
First would be a 1963 Corvette Stingray.
Wow.
Jeez.
Second would be the original McLaren F1.
Oh.
Is it late 90s?
No passengers in his car.
Yeah, it was late 90s.
Well, no, the McLaren had three seats.
One seat. Cheers, man.
Well, no, I have three, but one in the middle.
I can get Alex and you in, and Ken can...
Ken on the roof.
Roof, yeah.
The roof rack.
Yeah, just like on Top Gear.
Yeah, the prehistoric human roof rack.
And then my... I can't think off the top of my head now. My number one choice. I did write it down.
Vegan powered. Powered on veg.
Powered by cows.
No, that's the opposite of vegan powered. That's meat.
I want powered by cows.
Cow with some reins. So.
And my final one would be a late 90s Land Rover Defender. But all very off-road built and ready to rock and roll.
For a vegan, you don't really care about
the environment that much.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Might as well get a couple
because it's unlimited money, I can put electric engines in all these cars.
Which, no,
you're not going to, though, are you? You're not going to put one in a McLaren F1.
Yeah, would. Why not?
Oh, no.
Ollie's just said the three cars that he would buy are all going to be kit cars, and he's just going to make the shell look like nice cars. That's literally it.
Well, at least keep the original engine in the Stingray. Just keep it in your garage. Don't drive it. Then you don't harm the environment.
Well, I don't harm the environment anyway because I'm a vegan, so I'd probably keep the engine.
It doesn't work like that.
Sharp. Vegan logic. Vegan logic.
But
those would be my top three.
I have to say, Ollie, I expected at least one really, really expensive car, which obviously is the McLaren F1. I didn't see the Stingray coming, by the way.
It's been one of my favorite cars for years. And yeah, going
car
to the
car is pornography on wheels, isn't it? With split window and everything. Oh.
Yeah, it's ever since going to Goodwood. I used to go when I was 8, 9 years old, and seeing that Corvette driving up the hill at Goodwood or at the Revival, it's just it's not great around the corners, but it's a monster on the straight, and the noise, and it's such a unique looking car.
It's just beautiful.
So that's I'd probably say Corvette is my number one out of the three, but they're all lovely cars.
They're all up. Yeah, they're good choices. For those of you that aren't listening to this on YouTube, because the YouTube episode is going to have the pictures of the cars that we selected included. If you're listening on Spotify or Podomatic, just pull up Google, have a listen, Google the cars. I'm sure you won't be disappointing. Knowing R4, I don't think anyone's going to have a an ugly car in their budget top three, I think.
Rick's
Nissan Leaf.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no. Oh, no.
Oh,
right. Well, now that...
I have to go to number four now. Thanks,
Well, now that we're on the topic of ugly cars, there's... Well, I have had, because I'm a few years older than you guys, a few. I have had a few more cars, so I'm just going to include some of mine, like, spread out. And speaking of ugly cars, I had one that I think we owned it for 6 weeks, maybe? Because it was so bad. And that was a Kia Rio Estate 1.3.
Ooh.
And my God, was it awful.
Why that?
Well, no, we actually had a really cool... Well, it came from the same dealership. Well, I wouldn't call it dealership. I would call it the most dodgy place in the world, but still. We got a really cool dark green Volkswagen Golf Mark III from there.
Nice.
That we bought. Like, we always had our main car, and then always, like, a car on the side for the second one of us to go to work. And we found that Golf, and it was so... It was all original. Hadn't been screwed around with, and we loved driving it. And then suddenly, one morning, my girlfriend says to me, like, I was driving the car yesterday, and it sounds really loud. It sounds like a rally car. And I'm like, and the bad thing about that is? She says, you know, can you have a listen? So I start up the car, expecting a minor rattle or something. But my God, the sound that came out of it. So it was either the rear muffler or the catalytic converter had. Was just gone. There was a massive hole in it.
Oh dear.
But it sounded so good, but everyone stared around like, what are you doing, man? So we eventually tried to get it fixed. So I bought a brand new exhaust for it and sent it round to some colleagues of my girlfriend's dad to have it fixed. And while it was up on the lift, they said, would you mind coming to have a look? And that was the second car, the Ford being the first and the Volkswagen Golf being the third. Who suffered from minor rust issues?
Oh dear!
You need to keep them in a better place, Ken. You're just keeping it
acid rain in Assen.
Well, not that bad. But we bought that Golf with a spanking new MOT, so we were like sorted. And then we asked the guys, and they were like, "What blind man gave this car an MOT?" So we went back to that dealership, and he's like, "Oh no refunds." And we're like, "Mate, how could you give this an MOT? It's dangerous to take out on the road and blah, blah, blah." And then eventually, we're like, "You're right. You can pick anything, or you know, pick a different car from the lot." Then, but there wasn't that
just
much.
Just scrappy.
You wouldn't want to, would you?
There wasn't that much choice, so we got a Estate because we thought, you know, that was a sensible choice, and it was. It was useful for moving things. Yeah, and that's about it. I did move a what was it? We were redecorating the front yard with like those little pebbles, you know, those stylish pebbles.
Okay, yeah.
Stones, yeah.
Yeah.
Stones,
yeah.
I
picked those up with the Estate car, just chucking bags of like 20 kilos a bag, just chucking
tiny
bags
boulders.
In. Thank you.
All right, Ali, we get it, bro.
I was just keeping chucking bags in, not looking at the maximum weight of the car. And I was like, who needs two trips anyway? So I just kept chucking the bags in, thinking that's enough for the front yard. Driving away, it took me forever to get to 10 kilometers an hour. I'm like, all right, maybe I'm a bit heavy, but you know, it's only a 2 minute drive anyway. And then I came to a speed hump. I went across the speed hump and my front wheels didn't really fancy touching the floor anymore or the asphalt anymore. And I noticed like the steering was like, I'm like, why is the steering so light? But the thing is, I wasn't touching anything because I just chucked about double the weight of the car in the back.
I was trying to distribute the weight of like a
50-50
in your car.
No, it was 50-50 weight distribution, I think. Well, we eventually we sold that car onto a family of refugees who just got a house nearby and for their first car, so we did it way cheaply so they could have their first car. But my God,
was still feel hard done by.
Well, I mean, the car was technically fine, and I still see it driving around town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's still running fine. Well, as fine as it can get, but yeah, that was, for the love of God, don't buy a Kia Rio Estate.
Copy.
I remember that one.
Yeah. There is one car I actually want to talk about, because out of all the cars that we have, it's got the most horsepower.
Oh, here we go then.
Yeah, yeah, it's got a whopping 181 brake horsepower. I have the torque figures as well. 280 foot-pounds of torque, which is 380 newton meters. And I'm speaking Chinese, aren't I?
That means yeah. nothing to me. That means.
Are you talking about Rickson's V8 Corsa, or is
no?
This, is
I am
that,
not. I'm oh, talking yeah, about. Corsa. I'm talking about someone who made all the right decisions. He made all the right decisions. He got a car which has 181 horsepower. Which goes actually quite well, which doesn't weigh that much. Oh. It's great on petrol. Well, no, it's not great on petrol because it's a diesel.
Is it one of your cars?
No, it's not one of mine. It's someone who bought a BMW and decided he wanted a diesel.
Yeah!
Boom.
I'm one of those Beamer people. I bought a nice 2-litre M Sport 1 Series.
And he drives
a diesel!
Yeah, I got to go places, mate.
Yeah, and to school and back.
I don't live that close to work, so I need to do a fair bit of driving. So I needed to get a diesel, and I settled on that one. If I didn't need to drive to work, I would have got a Focus ST.
Well,
questionable choice.
I mean, I like the 1 Series; it looks really cool, but.
And as you heard, I drive it to its full potential.
What? So you're like one of the guys, or one of those type of people who says, "I paid for the whole speedometer. I'm going to use it."
Well, I paid for the whole rev counter, not necessarily the speedometer.
So the whole rev, or the whole, what is it? 4,500 RPM.
It's about 5,000. It goes to if I really push it.
Ooh, fancy! You got a diesel, obviously, because you have to cover a lot of.
I got to cover some miles and. 2-litre because it's, pacey, and it's rear-wheel drive as well.
Yeah, but the sound of a diesel engine.
I don't really listen to the sound normally because I got the music on too loud anyway.
You're such a chav.
Yeah.
That's me, a chav?
Rickson, when have you ever looked at me and thought I'm a chav? What have you ever looked at me and gone, yeah, chav?
Alex.
Although saying that, he's probably like classic in it because it's him, but.
But Alec, you do wear a gold chain while no one else does.
I don't wear a gold chain. I don't wear a gold
you
chain.
You do?
I don't.
It's silver.
Yeah, it's silver, yeah.
But... Ah, it's still same thing, different colour.
Mate, honestly, I enjoy that car so much. It's great fun.
Well, I can understand. I mean, it's a BMW. It's bound to be good. And obviously, rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, it's definitely fun.
I think only... Yeah, Rickson, you're the only one of us who hasn't experienced rear-wheel drive yet. Because, Ollie, you just purchased a vehicle, what is it, a month ago now?
I think about 3 months now I've had it.
Oh, 3 months, yeah. So you're now officially part of the rear-wheel drive club.
I am.
It's just better, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Unless it's snowing, then you're stressing a bit. But other than that, but Ollie, talk us through it. What did you just add to your collection?
So I decided to start my own hairdresser business. So to go with that, I bought a Mazda MX-5 Mark III 2-litre Sport. Ooh. So when I go fast the roof down, I don't even need to style my hair because the wind does it for me.
Well, you save up on hairdressing costs then.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a professional hairdresser anyway, so that's not a problem. I cut my own hair.
I mean, no, it doesn't cut his hair for him. He still has to go to a barber. He just doesn't have to...
No, I'm a professional barber. I cut my own hair. Have you not seen how good good my hair is?
You post that picture of
receding.
So first got it, and you put that on Instagram. Can we put that up if possible? Because just a picture of like a business card, and just like Ollie's shit barbering business with the phone number below. It's that picture. I'd look at that. And I'd legit think that you're a little bit bent, but I got it. Is a pretty good. It is a pretty good purchase. The only thing I'd say is you got it in. Is it blue? You got it in blue?
No, silver.
Silver.
Where did I get blue from? I would say you can't buy an MX-5 in any other color but red. You have to get a red MX-5.
Well, no, yeah, silver. The Mark 1, yeah, the NA, the Miata. That always had to be red.
Yeah, the Miata always had to be red.
But the NC, I don't know. Silver looks good on an NC.
It has to be red, man. I think you're breaking rule number one there. But saying that, I drive a Corsa, so I can't say a thing. But, you know.
Well, you did upgrade, eventually, from a Corsa.
To another Corsa, yeah.
But with a bigger engine.
It was just because I'd financed the other one and took it back to the garage, and they went, do you want this Corsa? It's been sat here for a month. It's only done 15 miles. Do you want it? And I was like, how much? And they were like, well, we'll lower the price because we can't sell it. And I was like, all right, I'll have it. That's what I did.
Ooh, hard bargain that.
Well, it was more the fact that they cut a pretty substantial amount off it, and it was brand new. It had done 15 miles. Like, how can you not say no to that? And like, I've got 3 years warranty on it, like, just because it's come straight from the showroom, which is great.
And what color is yours?
It's black with black rims. Ooh. Special.
I like the all black.
That would look amazing on your MX-5, actually, all black.
It does have black alloys anyway.
Oh, nice.
Black alloys, red calipers. They're not very red anymore because, as the viewers will know, I changed my brake pads and discs today and they were very stiff, so I had to take a hammer to it and the paint.
Did you call Alex Rath? He's really good with stiff things.
Unbelievable.
So I had to do a lot of... you did use a lot of grease, so it did work. But yeah, they're not very red anymore. But I'll have to repaint them. But yeah, black alloys, red calipers on a silver car with a black soft top does look rather nice.
Yeah, that looks good. Well, I owned, actually still own, but it's how would you call it? I don't pay insurance anymore, and it's not on the road now. Yeah,
it's what we have over here.
It's in storage. Basically,
yeah, it's off the road, but you still own it.
Yeah, I still own it, but yeah, it's off the road, which is a 1996 Fiat Barchetta, which didn't really sell big in the UK because they refused to do a right-hand drive conversion. but they wanted it to rival the MX-5, but obviously the MX-5 being rear-wheel drive and the Barchetta is based on the underpinnings of a Punto, which is front-wheel drive. But I absolutely... Well, I'm selling it now because it's a two-seater and we're going to be with three in February. So I'm with pain in my heart. I have to sell it. But God, did I love that car.
Any car that's got a soft top is something to love.
It's I mean, having a really rough day at work, especially in summertime, having a rough day at work, I would just drop the soft top down. It had a stainless steel exhaust. Open air filter or what is it called, air induction, and I would just drive home, actually take a detour and just relax with the soft top, or driving home at midnight in the summer when it's still 15 degrees outside. Those moments are where you really see the appeal of a convertible.
Yeah, until you drive one, you don't understand how
exactly.
I think that's the coolest car any of us have owned, I'd say. Is that Fiat?
Well, it was expensive to keep it on the road because it's still an Italian car, which, you know, they always say about Italian cars, the electronics.
Well,
everything apart from the electronics was trying to be very Italian. You know, little clips breaking off left and right. What else went wrong? Oh yeah, I took it on holiday, you know, in in Belgium near the Spa circuit, which is really lovely surroundings. And then the alternator decided that he didn't want to charge my battery anymore. Because first I lost power steering, then I lost brakes, then I lost everything.
Ouch!
And then that was because, you know, you pay so much money to keep it on the road, and then all you do is take it to work and back home, and then you're like, I'm going to treat it with a nice road trip, and then
it decides it doesn't want to be treated
It doesn't want to be treated like that, so... But if it's all fixed now, so if there is anyone that wants to buy it, just see, I'm gonna plug.
I mean, I'll take it, but I think delivery would be quite expensive.
Mate, I'll happily drive it over there. But yeah, it is only left-hand drive. But
yeah, it's such a shame. Think how big a car that could have been in the UK if they'd have converted it to right-hand drive.
Yeah, well, the MX5, so. Nah. MX5 over here is massive, but in the UK it's even bigger.
The reason people like cars like that over here is simply because you can't get them in this country very easily. Like,
yeah,
that's the only reason. Oh, to be fair, yes, they do look good. But if you could get those in this country, they'd be relatively common, man. And you'd just find them in junkyards now. That's just how cars are in this country.
Yeah,
true.
Most people over here drive cars because they're cheap. That's just what a general person that doesn't give a shit about cars just drives something because it's cheap. Like, outside of that, they don't care.
Yeah, it's true. That is very common over here. People just get a car. And whatever they can afford at the time is whatever they then end up buying.
And they literally drive it until it breaks, and then they buy a new one. Like, that's it.
Yeah. Well, Rickson, now we're on to you anyway, because we said, you know, people just buy cars they can't afford. I think it's your turn to say what you would buy if you could afford any car in the world. Your top three.
Well, since Ollie ruined the Nissan Leaf, which would be really in my top kind of top eight. So what I think I'd start with is I'd have a Tesla Model S.
Ooh,
so
good idea.
Obviously good for the environment. So vegan power and all that. You know, if I can't have a Nissan Leaf, I'll have the next best thing, which is the Model S. Very comfortable. It's a Tesla, man. They're great cars. And then I thought what I'd do is I'd get something that's my daily, which would be the Model S. Then I'd get something that I'd like. I'd do like the Model S, but I'd go for a Nissan Skyline R33 in purple. In that GT1. On the PS1, my favourite car to drive
was
the R33 in purple, because purple was the default colour. And when I was 5 years old, I didn't know how to change the colour, so I'd just have it in purple. So, do the same thing now. I wouldn't do anything to it. Right-hand drive, obviously. Wouldn't do anything to it. Just
leave it
stuck.
Stop. Yeah.
Keep it stuck. Just make sure it's functional. I'd just do that. And then... Because I still technically haven't... Because the Model S is, you know, if you're good with your money, it's not too much to ask in terms of money. It's not stupid. So then I just thought, fuck it, let's go for a Merc AMG GTR in green with all the bells and whistles ready for
is
a...
It,
ready
is
for
that
a
the SLS? Is that the SLS GTR? Oh, my... Yeah. Oh.
In that lovely dark green. The gloss dark green. The
okay,
ring,
yeah.
Body kit on it, don't care. That's the one that only ever comes out on special occasions, like a first date. I get that out for the first date.
Well, I mean, Rickson, you say go full out, but it's actually, well, I wouldn't say affordable.
It's definitely not affordable, especially if you're going to put all the bells and whistles on it.
Yeah, so, but comparing to some of the hypercars, it's more affordable.
I don't like the look of very many modern hypercars anyway. I just think they're so
over the top, or
they're just driven to go. Obviously they're created to be quick, but the comfort and the style of the actual outside of the car just gets taken out of the story completely in most cases. So I like that, because it still looks like you could obviously even turn a lot of heads because it's fucking bright green, but it's still kind of low key that you can get away with it without just annoying everybody, you know?
You could take it into town.
Yeah. It would get nicked if I did it in Birmingham. So I'd never drive it in Birmingham. But saying that, a Nissan Leaf would get nicked in the centre of Birmingham, so you know.
What is the fascination suddenly with Nissan Leafs? Did I receive a memo?
It really, really angers you that I like Nissan Leafs. Oh, all right, so I'm gonna keep going with it.
If no one understands the reference, please go back and listen to our last podcast where Ken gets very angry.
Go back and watch it. But also, everybody that listens to this is in my boat. The Nissan Leaf is a brilliant car.
Yes, completely agree.
Yeah, but not if
Ken, he likes angry sounding engines, clearly. But
well, I mean, if they say to me like, have any car you want, my first thought isn't going to be a Nissan Leaf, is it?
But is that is literally my first thought.
That's where you're wrong.
Vegan power, first thought.
Well, I agree on the Model S, obviously. Those cars. Have you driven one, Rickson?
My boss has the Model 3, and I've sat in it. And we've also sat in a Model S at Goodwood, I believe.
Yeah, yes.
They have like the fucking space station touchscreen, don't they?
And that's when we were at Goodwood. Yeah, I think it was Rickson and Reese. We were up in the Tesla car area, and they were looking at the cars. And I happened to walk past the toy version of the Model 3, and you thought it'd be hilarious. Oh, Ollie, that's your car. Because I'm the shortest of the group.
And then I remember you got in it and crashed it, didn't you? And then you like took it off the second floor, drove it home. Well, pedaled it home.
Pedaled it home. Yeah, I had the police after me, helicopters. I was on TV, Most Wanted for a while. They pardoned me because they were like, oh, don't worry, Ollie, you're a ledge. So
well.
Oh, mate, you might be sick. You've just said that.
I said it in the before we get into the whole electric car discussion again. I said it before. Well, we didn't define this, but the wise men over at Top Gear once said that you can't be a true petrolhead unless you've owned an Alpha. I know.
Correct.
I didn't. Rickson didn't. Alex didn't. But you have, Ollie.
I've owned
an Alfa.
I've had two Alfas. I've had two Alfa Romeo Mitos. And they are the worst car to ever exist.
That's not how I saw that going, actually.
It's just an ugly car. It steams up really easily. It's horrific to reverse because it's got a tiny rear window. It looks like a retarded beetle. It's just awful. Anyone who's ever thought about getting one, don't, because they're more expensive than getting a Corsa or a Ceto in insurance, because they think, oh, it's an Alfa. It's going to be fast. It's not. It's probably slower than a Corsa, and it's a 1.3. It just, yeah. The only good thing is because it's a modern Alfa, a modern Italian car, the electrics didn't break. But apart from that, it's not a good car. So don't buy one. But the only reason I've got it because my brother rolled the Corsa. So it was that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was away at university and I came back to find an Alfa on the drive and not the lovely blue Corsa that we had.
Because it was still stuck in a ditch or...
Yeah, I mean, it was crumpled into a cube because it was no more the Corsa. But yeah, the Alfa, yeah, it got me from A to B, but it's do not buy one.
Well, it had two.
Yeah, well...
It was so bad, he got another one.
Yeah, it's so terrible, I bought a second one.
Well, I didn't buy the second one. It was a case of, I didn't have a car for a few months, so I used my brother's one while he was away at university. So technically I didn't own it as such, but I have driven it long enough to count it as my, let's call it my own car. It was a petrol, which has made it even worse because it was even worse on fuel economy. So don't buy one. So just, if you're going to buy an Alfa, buy a Brea
Giulia.
Or a
buy
Giulia
a one.
Or
the
159.
Or just ask Kimi Raikkonen knows a lot about Alfas.
Yeah.
Just ask Kimi Raikkonen. If you watch any F1 qualifying, that's all you hear. I know more about Kimi Raikkonen enjoying an Alfa Romeo than I do about how Hamilton did in Q2 in a qualifying session. Because there's more screen time of Kimi Raikkonen than there is of him. And he's the one driving the car. Like, what? Sorry, rant over. Carry on.
Yeah, the new Giulia is, especially if you get the QV, the Quadrifoglio Verde.
Ooh,
that car, yeah.
That sounded spicy, Ken.
Has anyone seen Six Underground? That no. Absolute explosion fest from Michael Bay.
I thought it was a tube station.
It was, it's an acceptable movie, like if you just sit back with a beer and watch stuff explode. But one of the star cars in the beginning is Giulia QV in a really, how would you call it? Like, not really lime green, but, well, like the SLS, that kind of green, like really flashy green.
Mm.
So that movie comes out, it's the Giulia, and everyone that watched that movie is like, oh God, that car is beautiful, because it was like that green, dark, black mirrors, black diffuser, black front splitter, and everyone was like, who had the money, was like, I want a Giulia, but I wanted it that color, and Alfa said, oh, we don't make that color.
Oh, that's not good.
But would you mind making it, because everyone loves it, due to, you know, because it was in a movie? Nah.
Classic Alfa.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That car is just beautiful. I mean, there's a few Giulias driving around here, and it's just, oh, they're beautiful, because they got the flair of a sporty sedan, but still got a bit of that Italian thing to them. I don't know.
I still think the classic Alphas look nicer.
Yes.
The old Giulia from the 60s, I think, and then the original Sportiva and the Spider are nicer, but they don't make cars like that anymore, unfortunately.
No, they don't. Let's see if Alex, in his no-budget top three, also has an old Italian car, or maybe an Italian supercar or sports car.
Or Nissan Leaf.
Well, that was going to go in, and then everyone ruined it, so I can't put in the Nissan Leaf.
Oh, boo.
Because it would have gone in there.
Can't take more jokes. It's ha-ha, funny. I'm not serious answer and make a joke out of it, because we all find it ha-ha, funny. You can't do that. Take it back. You can't have the Nissan Leaf.
Well, not going to have the Nissan Leaf. Unfortunately, you've already taken one of my picks.
I'm happy. I've never been happier.
You've already taken one of my picks, because in my list was going to be the Tesla Model S.
Oh, I'm just
definitely a car I'd own.
That was bad, aggro, sorry.
Alex.
Yeah, oh, look, it will be in my list until the Roadster comes out. And then when the Roadster comes out, that will be in my top three.
Well, I'll put Tesla Roadster then, because that's...
It's supposed to be released this year, so...
Can't have a car that isn't a thing.
No, it's like, oh yeah, I'll have a space rocket then, as my one of my favorite cars.
I'll put a Model S then, fine. A Model S.
It's the same as me. What the? If Alex drives that car, it makes me a bender, so I've got to change mine if I'm going to drive that.
Do you want to change yours to a Nissan Leaf, Rickson?
Do it. Yeah. Let's do it.
Nissan Leaf it is. This is going straight on Twitter.
This is going straight on. So, yeah, as Jack said, Tesla Model S is just—it's a Tesla. It's such a nice car. It's well built, spaceship-like interior, and it's just a great car and relatively inexpensive as well. Somehow, it's such a good car. My second pick would be an Audi RS7.
Oh,
because it's like, honestly, you put 700 horsepower in a car that's got a massive boot, loads of space.
For all the kids, any Alex? Get the whole family in the back.
You know.
What, the one he from proper steals?
Family car. It's a proper family car.
You haven't got a family. Why would you need one?
Future proof of mate. RS7, incredible car.
I know, I don't doubt the car. I'm just saying. Get in the car!
It's good for smuggling people. There we go.
All right.
There you go. Yeah, sure.
That took a dark turn.
Yeah. No, like the RS7, it's such an incredible car. I love it so much. And my third pick you mentioned it vaguely earlier, Ken, would be the Ford Escort Cosworth RS.
Ooh, oh, yes.
Nice car.
That is spicy. Like, that's a car you could, like, it's a car that belongs on a track or on a windy road, or it's incredible. It's such a nice car. It would be so good to own one of them and just rag it around a track or, you know, winding roads. Around where I live, I got a lot of winding roads because I sort of live near, sort of around the countryside. So it'd be so good to just take on a drive. That would be the dream.
Oh, I mean, good top three. It's got a bit of everything.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I really like, obviously, your top two. The RS7, I would up the RS6, I think. But the Ford Escort Cosworth RS is just, it's iconic, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely iconic. It's
so far, yeah. All three of you, as your number one pick, have been completely different. Ollie's got a Land Rover Defender. Rickson's got a Merc, the SLS AMG GTR. And you've got Cosworth RS. But let's be honest, all three of them are what I like to call poster cars.
Mm.
Yeah, they definitely are. Yeah, totally.
We are nearing the end of the podcast because all that's left is a few cars. But, Ollie, you've got one more car to talk about.
I do.
But before that, I'm just going to say one about, you know, my brand loyalty. Because I have four cars remaining, but two of them are for the same brand.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said about... course, having a diesel, I had the same thing with a lot of, that I had to drive a lot of distance. So I had a Seat Ibiza, I don't know how you pronounce it over
Ibiza,
there.
Ibiza, I think.
Yeah, 1.4 TDI, which I owned for 7 years.
Wow,
that's a long time.
Yeah, after that, after the Ford Escort misfortune, I got the Seat, and I owned it up until March, I think, this year. It had 200,000 kilometers on it, which is many miles.
What mileage did it have when you bought it?
37,000 kilometers.
Wow. 170,000 kilometers in that car.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it, but obviously my family lives in Belgium. Because if we go and visit my parents for a weekend, it's 800 kilometers.
Jeez.
That's a long way, isn't it? That is a long way.
Yeah. So we love that car, and we were thinking about, you know, do we want to trade it in for something bigger before it hits 200,000 kilometer mark, and then the price drops slightly. And now we're expecting our first child, so we needed a bigger car anyway, because you can fit a child seat in the back, but it's a bit cramped.
It's not ideal, is it?
Yeah. So now we got a Seat Altea, which is officially an MPV. What is it?
Multi-vehicle.
Yeah. Because we were like, what do we get instead? And I was like, you know, Seat never, you know, treated us right. Seat treated us right. It never set a foot wrong. Why not stick with it? But we got away from the diesel because over here, diesel is getting really expensive and insurance as well. So now we've got 2 liter petrol. It goes like the absolute clappers, to be fair. Because if I'm on a school run and I'm running a bit late, I'm fine. So yeah, but I mean, I love both cars because Seat is basically like the cheaper/sportier alternative to Volkswagen, isn't it?
Well, are they owned by the same company?
Yeah.
So it's kind of Volkswagen's like, here's a car sort of division, isn't it, really?
Same engine.
If you can't afford a Volkswagen, you get a Seat. And if you can't afford a Seat, you get a Skoda. And then there's no point even living if you own a Skoda. So
if you can't afford a Skoda, then you need to sort of rethink life choices.
If you buy a Skoda, period, you need to rethink your life choices.
No. Skodas are cool. Skodas are cool now. Octavian VRS, stuff like that.
Stuff like that is cool. But with the Ibiza, like, it's slightly, it felt slightly bigger than a Golf without feeling like an absolute yobbo driving a Golf. And with the Altea, Volkswagen doesn't make an MPV. They only make estates, and that's the Passat and the Golf Plus. The Golf Estate. And those just don't look as good. Because Seat's got a bit, you know, they use 99% of parts from Volkswagen, but then they just put their own styling to it, which is why I kind of like them.
But it works, doesn't it? You know, say are actually decent cars. There's nothing really to go wrong with them. They're just
It's Volkswagen parts. They've been tried and tested in so many models.
Yeah, they have. Pretty much just go wrong.
Put them in. Yeah. Speaking of bulletproof cars, Ollie, you've owned a car from a brand that established themselves for being bulletproof, haven't you?
Yes, I owned a mighty Volvo, so I aged many years when buying that car.
You went grey when you got in it.
I did, yeah. I got out with a beard, which is unheard of because I can't grow any facial hair. So I bought a Volvo C30. It was a 1.6 e-drive, so it was diesel again, and very economical. However, I seem to have bought the only Volvo that broke down, because within the week, the fuel injectors went, so I could only go for like 50 miles an hour to the engine doesn't blow up. And then I got a puncture. So that within the 2 weeks, I've had two problems. Then the what is it? It was making a funny noise, and I had that fixed. I can't remember what it was again, but it cost me a couple of £100. So it wasn't the most, it wasn't the greatest of cars, but I could do 70 mpg, which is unheard of. So
yeah,
it was good in that sense, but it's. Yeah, it was a car before my time, really. But it was a good car, regardless.
Well, the styling for the C30, you know, like by Volvo standards, yeah, for Volvo standards,
yeah,
they've gone mental, haven't they? They never made a hatchback.
No.
The only problem with the earlier C30s, and I think the 1.6, I'm not sure your year had that issue, but for some C30s, they used parts from Ford.
Yes.
Ford engines.
Yeah. Mine was 2012, so it's one of the last ones they ever made.
Yeah.
But I mean, great car, but it was difficult to park as well. Or maybe I'm just not very good parkers.
Maybe you need to revisit parking.
No, we work for Volvo as well, and every time I drive a C30, I'm struggling to see anything in the mirrors.
Yeah, it's because it's got a very angled back to the that hatchback. It's only got four seats as well, but. It was a good car, and, you know. It's not as good as the Mazda, but it's a very different car to the Mazda.
Yeah.
But it was, at work, I had to drive a lot of work anyway, so it was good for that reason. But yeah, I don't think I'll get another C30. I don't think I'll get a Volvo again personally. For now, anyway.
Well, I mean, the older Volvos, like, they're still really popular for some reason. Some might buy them ironically.
Yeah.
But...
maybe like a 950, what we spoke about last week. Like
yes.
A touring car special. I'd get one of those ones. But
obviously.
Or maybe like a Volvo Amazon or something like really old. But
yeah, but those have really gone up. Because they're classics now.
Yeah. But for now, I'll stick to the Mazda. I don't know, we're going to talk about future cars, but I'd love to get a van as well. And convert it.
Yes.
But that's another story for another day.
Okay, oh, that's for another. That's for another non-race weekend podcast.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because there are we're not finishing the podcast just yet. There's one more little part, but this is the first of non-F1 race weekend's podcast. There are a few coming up, especially during the Formula One winter break. So make sure you tune in for that, and obviously follow us on Twitter at GridWatchersPod to make sure when we're going. When we're recording. Because we've got a few ideas in the pipeline to overcome the miss of Formula One, aren't we?
Yes, lots of ideas to keep the audience entertained over the Christmas period, and we might even do a giveaway or something as well if we're feeling very Christmassy.
Feeling
very giveaway. Christmassy. Well, to close down the car history, I think we've covered all the cars, aren't we? So all that's left is my final two, I think.
Correct.
Which are, well, because I said I had the Fiat Barchetta, which I drove all year round. First year I owned it. And then second year I was like, you know, in the winter, scratching ice off the outside of your windshield. Fair enough. Once it gets on the inside, maybe you need a different car for winter. So then I stored a car at work. That was last year. And then I got a BMW E36 316i, which is a four-cylinder.
Nice.
I love it in really dark green color. It was all original and everything. And I loved it, but a four cylinder Beamer is just, it tries to, but it just doesn't succeed.
It's not, there, is it?
Yeah, it's just not there. But I love driving it. It was really cool. Like, I took it from the Netherlands to Belgium to go see a concert, and it was so comfortable, so quiet and everything. I loved it. I loved it that much, in fact, that this year I stored the Fiat for winter and then obviously put it up for sale. That I got another BMW, which was supposed to be a winter car, but now I'm obviously keeping it because I need somewhere to put the child in the back, and in a two-seater convertible, where do you put him? but now I've got a sedan, BMW E46 320i, which is finally a six-cylinder BMW.
Very nice.
It's a 2.2 liter six-cylinder, and not gonna lie, if you get a chance to drive a six-cylinder Beamer, it's just, I don't know, I can't explain it. It's just a different feeling. Like those two extra cylinders, I don't know. BMW owners will know what I'm on about, but it's my first six-cylinder car, and I absolutely love driving it.
It's so good. I'll agree with you on that one. It's so good. They're so nice to drive.
So smooth as well. So quiet on the motorway. I love it, and I'm keeping it stock. My first idea was like, I've seen cars with M-Tech bumpers and lowered and this, and I was like, but then someone said to me, "Oh, yours is looking, you know, really nice and original. It's 20 years old. Keep it original, you know, for resale value." And I was like, "He's got a point, actually." So now I'm doing my best, obviously maintaining it and the outside to keep it as original as possible. It's been lowered 3 centimeters just because it looks a lot better. Because it fills the wheel arches more, without being yobbo.
Pretty nice, actually. To be fair.
Yeah, it looks really. It's how the car was supposed to come from the factory, I think. But I absolutely love the E46. I can see why it's a really record selling car. Right. So to finish off this. Well, Grid Watchers Car History, Grid Watchers Garage podcast. I like to finish with my top three, which I don't know if it's going to be very controversial or not, because, Rickson might argue with me slightly, but he's not here anymore. He had to go for dinner, so that actually saves some effort.
What a shame.
But in my third spot, I would put a 1967 Ford Mustang Shelby GT500,
ooh,
which was the star car for one of my favorite movies all time, Gone in 60 Seconds, Eleanor.
That's nice. A proper American muscle car, isn't it? That's
that car makes my jeans feel a lot more tight. That car is just so sexy, especially with Angelina Jolie in the passenger seat. But that's a whole other different discussion. But that car is just, oh. In second place, I would put, and here's normally where Rickson would chip in, I would also put a Nissan Skyline, but I would put the R34 GTR.
Very nice.
Which is most known for its part in Too Fast, Too Furious, obviously, with the RB26 engine. Those cars have become ridiculously expensive, by the way.
Classics now, aren't they?
Yeah, but they're so rich. But I think it's over here, if you want a nice clean model, it's €27,000.
Jesus.
That's a lot.
That's some serious money, isn't it, to put down?
Yeah, that's... obviously, out of the box, they're good, but they're not exactly 800 wheel horsepower good. So you need to slap another few thousand in. But then my top one car of all time, and the car I... actually going to order on Posted this week, and I really hope it's going to be on my drive one day because it is attainable. It's a BMW E46 M3.
Is that the one that looked really good in gold?
That the Phoenix Yellow is the original color.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that car, that's the best Beamer ever, I think.
It was already my favorite car, and then it came out on the cover of Most Wanted. But it's just, I don't know, that car does things to me. We had one in at the shop a few days ago. That car is just, I don't know, it does something to me.
I think we can hear it does something to you, Ken.
I mean, power-wise, it's got, what is it, 343 ish horsepower out of the S54 engine, but it's just the styling, the side vents, it just, oh, I don't know. It is attainable. It's still 20-ish thousand euros, but it is one of the more attainable cars on this on our list.
But it's just... I don't know. I say probably the Land Rover Defender is probably the one, the easiest one to get.
That's the easiest one to get, and then probably the Nissan Leaf.
Probably more Nissan Leaf actually these days.
Can't believe that's on the list. That's unbelievable.
Well, I think it goes Leaf, Defender, and then the M3. Which, if you say to anyone, the M3 is in the same list as a Nissan Leaf, people will look at you funny.
People will definitely ask what list it's in.
But I have seeing these lists from all four of us, some of us actually have a car from a video game because you fell in love with the car due to a video game.
Yeah, I'm probably the only one that doesn't, really.
But they do have a big impact, don't they, on car culture?
Yeah, 100%. If you love a car in a video game, chances are it becomes part of your list, doesn't it?
Yeah,
100%.
Well, what I can say is from that our list is that it's diverse, attainable for you know at least one car is attainable. That's quite a different way of thinking while still keeping a petrol head thing in the back of our mind, which I actually quite like.
Yeah, it's good to see how different people's car interests are while also still having car interests.
Well, I do hope that in a few years, if we do meet up to go to another Goodwood, Ollie shows up in his McLaren F1, Jack shows up in his Merc, Alex, you're probably going to take the RS7?
Oh yeah, almost definitely, yeah.
I'll take the M3 then, and then we can go for a proper road trip, Top Gear style. How does that sound?
That sounds like one of us needs to win the lottery and be very generous to all of the others.
Well, you never know. I mean, you never know.
Good idea.
Right, guys. On that positive, feel-good topic, we're going to end this episode. We want to thank you very much for listening. You can listen to this episode on iTunes, Podomatic, obviously Spotify and YouTube, and you can find us under the name Grid Watchers. You can also find us on Twitter at Grid Watchers Pod, and make sure to follow us to make sure when we're going out again with the next episode, which is going to be the Turkish Grand Prix, which I think we're all looking forward to. New track. Well, old new track.
Yeah. It depends how old you are, depending on if it's a new track or not.
Yeah, well, that also depends. We are going to be back with you next week for the review and obviously us discussing the Turkish Grand Prix. But for now, goodbye from all of us here at Grid Watchers. Take care and see you next week. Bye-bye.